From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, my colleague Rachel Keith joins me to talk about the depositions in Ray Funderburk's lawsuit against Cape Fear Community College. That lawsuit began 3 years ago after a majority of trustees voted to kick Funderburk off of the college board for reasons that we'll get into today. And last month, the case settled. If the lawsuit had gone to trial, we would have seen testimony from key members of the college leadership, trustees, and top administrators who have, for years, declined to go on the record or substantively answer questions. Importantly, that testimony could have pierced the veil of personnel and confidentiality, not just about Funderburk's removal, but about broader issues and questions about the college's management. As we've seen in other lawsuits, like the Crime Lab suit or the more recent federal discrimination case against the city of Wilmington, there can be discussion of how things really work behind the scenes that journalists and the public are rarely privy to. Often, when a case is settled, that opportunity is foreclosed, and that includes depositions. That's sworn testimony given in response to questions from attorneys as part of the preparation for a potential trial. They don't often become public when a lawsuit is resolved out of court. But in this case, WHQR has acquired depositions from the lawsuit, which have given us new insights into the strengths and weaknesses of the case, but also the operations and attitudes of CFCC leadership. All right, with me here now to unpack all of this is my colleague, Rachel Keith. Rach, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So in order to understand the story of Ray Funderburk's suit against CFCC and some of the characters we're going to learn about through these depositions, I think we have to go back to the early days of President Morton's time with the college and explain how things have evolved, some of the reporting, and how we got to where things were when Funderburk was appointed. So let's go back and start around 2017, or even further back to 2015, when Jim Morton is appointed as the interim president.
Yes, and he came to CFCC from the airport. So he was doing finance there, but then he was moved into a different position. I think that's when some on the Board of Trustees and in the community thought he might be a good fit for Cape Fear Community College in 2015. He comes in as a vice president position, and they do waive a lot of the requirements for him. He had no prior background in higher education. He comes to CFCC with a bachelor's degree in marketing from UNCW.
Nothing wrong with a bachelor's degree, but the two previous presidents had doctorates and decades of experience in higher education. So this was clearly, to say the very least, a different direction they were going.
Yes. And we have reporting from the assembly that talked about that President Dr. Amanda Lee, who's now at Bladen Community College, she was more or less pushed out. I mean, she resigned, but there was some back reporting on potentially she was moved to make way for President Morton. And he was named interim. He was rewarded pretty handsomely. And then there was a hiring committee. And for example, trustees like Louis Burney and Xander Guy were on that hiring committee. They're still on the board now. There was reporting from the assembly that says they wanted Morton, and former Commissioner Jonathan Barfield also attested to this fact that there was a certain faction on the board that waived the requirements for that position and put him into the president's position in 2018.
And I don't want to belabor the point, but we do have to point out that year after year, we were seeing Jim Morton's service to the college being handsomely rewarded, you know, 10% raises year after year, significant bonuses, even at times when faculty and staff were getting nowhere near that. We heard from faculty leaders who were frustrated with that disconnect. But it was clear that the trustees were pleased with his performance and that he was in their good graces. We should also say that after he was hired, after about a year or two, we started hearing rumors and then seeing reporting from WECT and then from you, Rachel, about non-renewals. And I think we need to take a moment here and just explain this a little bit, because it is part of this groundwater issue with morale at the college. So unlike other government employees, and even other people in higher education, CFCC staff don't have a lot of protections. They basically have annual contracts. And so You do not often see someone at Cape Fear Community College get fired. You just see them get their contract not renewed, so a non-renewal. And one of the things we should note about this is that unlike getting fired from a regular government job where there is an official letter of termination, so journalists and the public can see what you did or didn't do, and there's some accountability for why you lost your job, with a non-renewal, there's no paper trail. And the other thing we should note, and Rachel, you've done some reporting on this, is that sometimes when these contracts are non-renewed, employees are walked out of their office, sometimes by sheriff's deputies or security, out of offices and buildings where they've worked for years or even decades. And that can be honestly humiliating for that staff, which has led to something of a dark nickname for the time of year when these non-renewals tend to happen towards the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, they call them Bloody May. And I've talked to, since 2021, over 50 people who have worked for CFCC, and this is a thing.
So this was happening, and I don't know how much the public was aware of this, but things sort of came to a head in early 2020 when WECT's Ann McAdams kind of broke the story of the alleged toxic work environment. And this came out of really two on-the-record interviews. I think a lot of people, myself included, had heard scuttlebutt and some off-the-record stuff out of the college. But these were two on-the-record interviews with Sharon Smith, who had been the head of HR, and Kumar Lakavani, who had been the head of the IT department. And they made a number of allegations. One from Lakavani was that Morton and others had instructed him to go into Sharon Smith's hard drive, where there was, you know, sensitive HR material that they both felt should not have been, you know, removed from that computer, should not have been accessed. Lakavani described Morton and his team as being paranoid. Other anonymous employees who also spoke to reporter Ann McAdams for that story referred to CFCC as a police state. Harsh words there. And the article also kind of intimated that there might have been more than a professional relationship between Jim Morton and his assistant, Michelle Lee. At the very least, it implied that they had a very close working relationship at the college and that Lee was involved in some of the things, allegedly, that Morton was doing that some of the employees took offense to.
Yes, and Michelle Lee, she's now chief of staff to President Morton, and she started at the college in 2000 as with her associate's degree, and she started as a payroll technician making about $28,000, and now she makes close to $186,000. And if you look at Michelle Lee's salary over a five-year span, that's a 77% increase in salary compared to Morton's roughly 60% over 5 years.
Now, we should note, at the time in 2020 when Ann McAdams' article came out, Morton and the college denied all wrongdoing and any inappropriate relationship between Morton and Lee. Some of the Board of Trustees members actually openly mocked some of ECT's reporting during a public meeting. I'll also note that then-trustee Jonathan Barfield, also a county commissioner, did say that he had heard some of these concerns and he had asked that they be looked into, but we can now flash forward 5-6 years. It doesn't seem like anything ever came of that. So it seemed, at least to the public and many people we've spoken to, like the trustees had pretty much ignored these complaints, ignored this reporting. They continued to support Morton and significantly increase his salary. And that was despite a series of incidents where longtime employees were pushed out or non-renewed. And then afterwards, there was often a recognizable correlation with compliance or oversight problems. And we'll have links to your reporting here, which includes accreditation warnings, being forced to repay state money, and recently financial oversight issues identified by the state auditor.
Yes.
And this whole time, basically between 2020, and I feel like kind of Ann McAdams passed the torch to you and you've been carrying it since, you have not been able to get an interview with the powers that be, either with Morton or trustees, about this stuff. But all of that to say that the college has sort of as a matter of course routinely told us everything is fine, they have no concerns. We have a longstanding collection of statements from the college, but we have not been able to really push these questions to those in power. And that's the environment that Ray Funderburk kind of walks into when he's appointed in July of 2022. So I think this is a good time to explain, who is Ray Funderburk? How does he end up on the Board of Trustees?
So the school board and the governor used to get seats on that board. Now it has changed to the legislature gets about 8 seats. The county commission gets some, and so does Pender County. But at this time, the school board put Ray Funderburk on the board. Interestingly enough, he was up against current board member Robbie Collins. And I also found that there was this campaign from trustee Bill Rivenbark, and he's a county commissioner, along with Michelle Lee, to tell the school board they'd like Robbie Collins back on that board. Robbie Collins is a real estate attorney. His wife is the Register of Deeds right now. He did not get put on that board, but eventually Robbie does take the place of another trustee that was pushed out. His name is Jimmy Hopkins. So that's the conditions for him getting on that board in 2022.
So there was, I think it's safe to say, there was some writing on the wall that there was at least some folks in power who didn't want Funderburk on the board in the first place. Although, to be fair, that may have just been because they had someone else that they thought would be a good pick. But it's not the warmest of welcomes that Funderburk gets when he lands on this board. Ray Funderburk was on the board of trustees for less than a year. So let's review some of his tumultuous short tenure.
Yeah, so it starts with, he tells this story that President Morton's raise is coming up. And he is being called by Michelle Lee even before he's sworn in to approve the raise. And he publicly later, he votes against the raise. And he said he didn't have any information to support that raise. And that was met with, why are you talking to the, quote, liberal media from trustee Bill Cherry, who we'll learn more about later in this hour. There was an issue with the leadership of the Cape Hatteras. It's the marine technology program is one of the most important programs. The students were coming and saying, we don't understand why you changed these policies that led to the resignation of the captain and another one of the shipmates. He also, we saw the removal of Jimmy Hopkins from the board. He was removed by Julia Olson Bozeman, who's a former commissioner, because he was apparently not going to the meetings. But in my research, I found there were other trustees that were missing meetings to the same degree as Jimmy Hopkins. And Jimmy also had an issue with the way that the board was going to purchase the Bank of America building for the nursing program.
Yeah, and we'll say this ultimately seemed like it served a clear purpose and a clear need, but there were a lot of questions about why this particular building, why at this time, how it was going to be financed. And I think some of those things were what Jimmy Hopkins was pushing back against the powers that be, and he was removed from the board. We can't say officially that that's why, but that's the timeline, was that, you know, he was on the board, he pushed back on an issue, and then he was not on the board.
Yeah, and Ray was trying to bring that to the public conversation and to the board. Let's talk about this openly. And he was shut down. He also tried to bring up the accusations of a toxic work environment. Can we please do a third-party independent survey? Since 2020, Morton and the board had long resisted any type of independent survey. They eventually did their own in-house survey.
And in retrospect, these issues seem to fit in a pattern. You know, board chair Bill Cherry telling him not to speak to the liberal media when he was under the impression that there were no constraints on his ability to speak to the press. Now, he is not the chair. Funderburk was not the chair. He was just a trustee, so he couldn't speak on behalf of the college, but certainly he could share his thoughts as members of Wilmington City Council do, as members of the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners do. And not wanting sort of a public eye on what was going on with the Hatteras situation, on not wanting to make public a survey that might show some morale issues, this all seemed to be of a piece from Funderburk's point of view. And then we get to his removal hearing.
That's right.
And we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, we need to take a quick break. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with my colleague Rachel Keith, and we're unpacking what we learned from the depositions in the case filed by Ray Funderburk against Cape Fear Community College. So we do not have time to recap the entire hearing, but there were two main charges here. One was that the board of trustees, the majority of the board of trustees, alleged that Funderburk had gone to an instructor and tried to pressure that instructor to change a student's grade. The details were basically that this would help that student be eligible for sports. The other was that Funderburk had gone to a black student event on campus, and they claimed that he had made comments disparaging the college. And we'll get into some of what they meant by all that. So that's where we were back in March of 2023. We covered that pretty extensively. Not long afterwards, Funderburk filed a lawsuit.
Yes, he filed suit in June of 2023, and it took this whole time to get that lawsuit settled, and we're about to talk to you about what's in some of these depositions that these people talked about under oath.
Right, so this is what would have come out, as we said, had Funderburk v. CFCC gone to trial, and importantly, these were the people in power at the time. They are speaking under oath, under penalty of perjury. So what we are going to read to you are from their sworn depositions. So these are their words. And we will note, again, before we get into this, that we reached out to the folks who we're going to be quoting here, including Chair Bill Cherry, Vice Chair Jason McLeod, Attorney Ken Gray, President Jim Morton, Chief of Staff Michelle Lee, and Vice President Brandon Guthrie. We shared both specific quotes that we planned to use and also sort of our broader takeaways from their depositions. We did not hear back from any of them individually. We did get a statement from the college, and I'm just going to read this verbatim. This is the first paragraph. The statements referenced in the deposition are allegations made by a former employee. The college disputes many of these claims and does not believe they accurately characterize the actions or statements of college leadership. Because this matter involves personnel-related issues, it would be inappropriate to comment on specific allegations or testimony. And so I'll note here that the college appears to be referring to a single employee in a single deposition, and that is former college dean Lynn Criswell, who, as we'll get to, does make some allegations about leadership. But notably, the college's statement does not address anything that leadership said in their depositions. And so I do not want to put words in their mouth, but I do want to make it clear that if they took issue with how we were quoting them from the deposition, again, quoting their sworn testimony, we provided as much opportunity as we could to them to comment on that, add insight, comment, context, and they did not take us up on that offer. All right, let's get into it. The first thing I want to talk about here is the instructor allegation. And this has a lot of moving parts, so bear with me because I want to lay this out a little bit. This stemmed from an incident where Funderburk came into a faculty area and, with several witnesses there, asked instructor Alvin Coleman about how well high school students were prepared for college classes. And he was asking this because there was a high school student who was dual enrolled at CFCC, and his coach had been pushing really hard to get one of his grades changed. And this was unsuccessful. Alvin Coleman had not budged. But importantly, the coach did know Funderburk. But he actually appeared at Funderburk's removal hearing to testify that he didn't ask Funderburk to take any action. Later, Coleman was interviewed by McLeod as he was building his case for Funderburk's removal hearing. And Coleman recorded their conversation, which was later transcribed. So we know that Coleman said that he didn't initially know who Funderburk was, and Funderburk hadn't identified himself as a trustee right away, and that Coleman was confused, like a bit weirded out, but he confirmed that Funderburk didn't ask about a grade change, and said Funderburk thought the student, quote, earned what they got. And of course, Funderburk himself has denied asking Coleman for a grade change. And after Funderburk spoke to Coleman, he also spoke to Dean Lynn Criswell, so it wasn't a secret that he had spoken to the instructor. So in the absence of direct evidence, what we learn from the depositions is that he was removed over his intent, not his actions. And that's something Funderburk told us he objected to.
Yes. So we do have depositions from the two main trustees who are in leadership. That is CFCC board chair Bill Cherry. Bill Cherry owned Air Wilmington for a very long time, business owner. We have vice chair Jason McLeod, who conducted a lot of this investigation of Ray Funderburk. and he's in real estate. But the implication was there, and that's what they went on. But they could never get an admission of any of the parties or any of the witnesses or anybody that he had the direct request to instructor Alvin Coleman. So while deposing Bill Cherry, Gary Shipman, who is the attorney for Ray Funderburk, he asked about the statement, quote, that the only thing Mr. Funderburk wanted to know was about the orientation for online students. Then Cherry responds in the deposition, that sounds accurate. Shipman also got Jason McLeod to answer, quote, nobody ever told you that Ray Funderburk ever inquired about any grade change demand, did they? McLeod responded, quote, no. So McLeod had essentially acknowledged this during Funderburk's public removal hearing in March of 23, instead leaning on his argument of implied intent. So he said during the hearing, this is not part of the deposition, quote, Funderburk, he's not a dumb person. He's not going to come right out and ask for a grade change, but his actions spoke much louder than he did. It's never appropriate for a trustee to confront an instructor, McLeod said.
So Alvin Coleman had been interviewed by Jason McLeod, and he had later written to Brandon Guthrie, the vice president, and none of that had, you know, provided evidence against Funderburk. Another insight we get into this period of time comes from Lynn Criswell, who was a dean at CFCC at the time.
So she said that Brandon Guthrie, this vice president who Alvin Coleman is writing to about what happened in that one-on-one with McLeod, Guthrie said to Lynn, I want to, quote, protect you and Alvin from this trustee, you know, pressuring you. And I'm saying, I don't, and this is Criswell saying, I don't feel pressured. Nobody feels pressured. And he kind of wants to use those words again.
So what Criswell is saying in her deposition is that she felt like Guthrie was trying to inject the issue of pressure, and she was pushing back and saying that's not what happened, but he was trying to use that language to sort of get it on the record. So also in her deposition, Lynn Criswell talks about her experience during the time period of Funderburk's removal.
Yes. So she attested that Alvin Coleman, she was essentially a supervisor over him, found the conversation between McLeod and him, quote, much more intimidating than the one for Funderburk. But we will say and acknowledge that Coleman has always been very clear in his recorded conversation with McLeod. And Criswell reflected this back that, quote, it freaked him out to suddenly have somebody in that position in the office suite. So, yes, Alvin Coleman did say, I'm uncomfortable with this, but it wasn't like you have to change this grade and I'm threatening you, but like, why is this person here?
There was nothing on the tape to suggest that the actual thing he was accused of had happened.
Yes. And again, the trustees always were like, this was his intention. But then there was no concrete evidence that there was this, you have to do this for someone I know.
When Gary Shipman asked McLeod why Funderburk would go to Coleman and then directly to former Dean Lynn Criswell after that interaction, which seemed to infer that he didn't have anything to hide, McLeod said that he felt like it was a, quote, cover-up.
Right. And once McLeod found out there was a recording of that conversation, that Coleman sought advice from his former dean about what happened with McLeod in that meeting, McLeod responded to Shipman. So basically they are putting to McLeod, did you know that Coleman recorded you? And so we have the transcript of everything you all talked about. And McLeod said, quote, yeah, I guess I felt slighted, wondering it seemed improper to report somebody without their knowledge of it.
So again, I think we can see a little bit of both sides of the case here. We can see why McLeod might have thought he was onto something. We can see why Funderburk felt like he was in the clear. And again, as he's told us in other interviews, the idea that he was being sort of arraigned on his intent is not usually how due process works. And again, part of his claim in this suit was that his right to due process was violated.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The college wanted to say this was improper. This is a morality issue. But his case was about due process and First Amendment speech. So they were coming at this situation from two different perspectives, essentially.
We also learned a little bit more about this from Criswell, who said that Guthrie told her, quote, "We have a lot of faculty who are angry or disgruntled," or whatever word he used. And he said, "The last thing we want is for them to run to Ray Funderburk thinking he's going to advocate for them," or something like that, which I think is interesting because, again, this is Criswell's describing what Guthrie told her. So it's not directly from Guthrie, but Criswell was also part of, you know, the administration. And it is the closest thing we've gotten to sort of an acknowledgement from anyone in power that there were disgruntled employees, although they've told us themselves.
Yes. And Lynn Criswell did record that conversation between her and Brandon Guthrie.
It's worth noting Criswell could have been called to testify during Funderburk's hearing when they removed him. She was away during the college spring break at the time. She said, "I did not believe they wanted me in that room based on the information I had shared with some of the top staff, including Guthrie." So in Coleman's deposition, because he was also asked to make statements on the record as part of this pretrial preparation, he later came to the conclusion that Funderburk's intent was to get the grade changed, but he could never say that he outright asked for it.
This is what the deposition showed. Maybe the intent was there. Did he ask you for this grade change? He couldn't say yes. I mean, he had to say no.
It's worth noting that he changed his tune from his original letter and his statements and in that recording that he made with McLeod. Coleman, right after Funderburk's removal hearing, received the President's Award. He was the only instructor to receive that award. It does come with a stipend, and he has subsequently been featured in several of the college's employee spotlights. That is, again, just the timeline. We're not saying this was a payoff, but that was pointed out to us by other people who have been watching this. And I think had this gone to trial, there would have been some more questions about that, about what really happened. Depositions give us a clear version of what happened, but I think there are still some lingering questions.
And we do know how he originally felt about everything, because he did record that conversation with Jason McLeod. That was the first time that someone in the trustees interviewed that instructor about what really happened. So I think that was the best recollection of events at the time when the hearing for his removal was happening.
So moving on to the second allegation that the Board of Trustees made against Funderburk, and this has to do with the Black Student Forum.
So during the 2023 removal, McLeod said, and we in the audience did not know who these people were, he said that three unnamed staff members had reported that they didn't like what Funderburk had said at this event. They were later revealed to be Jessica Mays, Jacqueline Foster, and Samantha Jackson. Interestingly enough, these employees, I looked in the directory, they're no longer at the college, apparently. And it was in the deposition of Jason McLeod that Michelle Lee brought them individually to interview with McLeod. We hear from both sides that he was the only trustee present at this forum, and he said he enjoyed it. And the thing that he said that really got the trustees upset was some of them, the majority of them, was that he wished the media had been there to learn about the students' experiences. And in the deposition, McLeod said, quote, "There's nothing wrong with that comment, but I believe that by identifying the media wasn't there, that undermines the organizers or the responsibilities of the administration."
Yeah, I also think part of the framing of this was that Cherry and McLeod, as we learned through their depositions, thought this was a private event for students and staff. We later learned from Criswell's deposition that it was a public event, and because she was one of the organizers. And it was called Community Conversations, and there was around like 100 people in attendance. We also heard in the deposition of attorney Ken Gray, who represents the board, that he felt Funderburk, quote, "said things that made the organizers of the event uncomfortable, feel like they were not doing their job, and that was inappropriate for a trustee to do." And that was echoing accusations that Bill Cherry and McLeod had made.
Yes, and Gray said also in his deposition, quote, "I think the thing with Mr. Cherry truly was the instructor, and then the other stuff was just icing on the cake." And the icing is his comments at the Black Student Forum. And there were a lot of pictures of this event from someone who worked from the county. I mean, this was open. Yes, I will concede that the media was not invited. I did not go because I knew that.
Yeah, I think watching this hearing 3 years ago, we were live streaming it. I was getting comments, and I remember people saying that they felt like there might have been some there to the pressuring the instructor charge, but they felt like this second charge was, frankly, flimsier.
And this is where the First Amendment speech rights come in as part of the lawsuit.
Exactly. So this was part of Funderburk's argument, right, was about due process. And the college was arguing that he had sort of crossed a moral line.
Yes. And McLeod said that night that he had the charge to bring, quote, the facts to the trustees. But a former trustee, Dolores Rhodes, said during the hearing, quote, there were 15 times when you said, I believe, in my opinion. You said you just gave the facts. You did not. Most of these are your beliefs. And if we're going to remove this man from the Board of Trustees, we all deserve the facts and only the facts. But we know from the depositions from the attorney, Ken Gray, and the leadership, Jason McLeod and Bill Cherry, they thought this was fair. And they thought that his intent was to get this grade change. But for Ray Funderburk, it was not fair because all the parties who were responsible for presenting this evidence had essentially already made up their minds. The college maintained through Ken Gray that the state gave them the authority to act on their behalf to conduct the hearing, and they did send the green light to Ken Gray, which he read at the beginning. And then this was really important. The depositions uncovered was who decided it was going to run this way. And yes, it was Ken Gray's decision to conduct the hearing in this way.
So from the depositions, we do learn more about what actually happened leading up to the hearing. In both McLeod and Cherry's depositions, we learn that they met with individual trustees and kind of presented their findings ahead of the removal hearing. And Funderburk was the last trustee that they met with. We've heard some people describing this as whipping votes, but certainly they were not hearing this for the first time during the removal hearing. So, according to a recording that Funderburk made, Ken Gray told him he couldn't contact Coleman, that's the instructor, at the heart of the grade change allegations before the hearing. That's sort of a key witness, and so that was a frustration for Funderburk. And in McLeod's and Cherry's deposition, they said that Funderburk could have brought any witnesses to his hearing and could have contacted anyone to prepare for it. So Funderburk kind of refuted that.
Yes, and in this recording that Ray Funderburk made of this meeting with Ken Gray, Jason McLeod, and Bill Cherry, Funderburk asked if he could contact the instructor, like you said, to which Gray replied, yeah, that won't happen, to which Funderburk said, at all? Gray said, that's correct. So in the depositions, McLeod and Cherry were like, oh, yeah, he could call anybody. He could have done this. You know, the coach did come and gave his testimony. So they gave that as an example. He could have asked people, but we have here concrete evidence that Ken Gray said, you're not talking to the instructor individually before this hearing.
Another thing we learned about was that McLeod had prepared a report of his findings. Again, this is prior to Funderburk's removal. And in Cherry's deposition, he's being asked by Funderburk's attorney, Gary Shipman. He's asked if Funderburk had access to the report, basically the charges against him. And as part of that conversation, Cherry acknowledges that Funderburk, quote, was being charged, and so he should have probably been provided that. And I'm not sure why he didn't get it.
Yes, and we do find out that Ken Gray, the attorney, in his deposition, he said that he is not the lawyer for any one trustee and that the chair's authority is somewhat nebulous, but they are typically the main spokesperson for the board. There was another attorney who worked with Gary Shipman, Thomas Harvey, who asked a question about Cherry's accusation that Funderburk wanted to destroy the college. So Ken Gray replied, quote, it could be interpreted that way, yes, adding, quote, I think there was competent evidence that Mr. Funderburk did not care if he did damage to the college.
We also learned that Gray thought the 48-hour notice that Funderburk got between that meeting and the actual night of the hearing was enough, but the depositions showed that McLeod had started his investigation about a week before that public hearing. Asked about this, Ken Gray said, I can't talk about the private meetings, but I do know that during the March 8th meeting, that's the date of the removal hearing, I instructed them all that this wasn't a done deal and that they should listen to all sides, and added that he was not, quote, adverse with Funderburk until they vacated his seat on March 8th and the investigation wasn't, quote, necessarily an adversarial proceedings. I asked if he would handle the investigation the same way. He said yes. And so this gets to kind of a strange moment where typically a board attorney represents the institution, but also specifically the board as the controlling governing body of that institution. But based on the depositions and what we know about the hearing now, it looks like that arrangement broke down a little bit because you had one trustee accused by other trustees, and the board attorney had to play some role in that. And that included blocking Funderburk from being able to interview one of the witnesses against him, which is part of his claim that his rights to due process were violated.
In the deposition, I mean, he is agreeing that Bill Cherry and Jason McLeod and the trustees, that they were in the right, that they had good reason to remove him from the board because of his behavior in these two instances.
All right. Well, we need to take one more quick break, but we will be back in a moment with some of the things we learned more broadly about Cape Fear Community College's leadership from the depositions in this lawsuit. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The News. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with my colleague, Rachel Keith, and in this final part of the show, we're looking past the specific allegations against Ray Funderburk and his defenses at some of the broader insights we got into the college leadership from the depositions in this lawsuit.
So essentially, Bill Cherry was deposed in November of 24, and he has been a trustee since 2017. And he was, again, chair of the board during Funderburk's hearing. And Cherry was asked if it was an important quality for Ray Funderburk to have a background in public education. He was a public school teacher. His dad served on the school board here in New Hanover County. And Bill Cherry said no and testified, quote, "As I look at CFCC, it's a $100, $150 million business. It just happens to teach. And business leaders and board members need, since we're involved with signing leases, since we're involved with budgets, I don't see that public education is of any benefit."
The deposition also pushed McLeod and Trey to touch on a number of other concerns that we've covered over the years, including Jim Morton's salary, which they initially said was not a public concern, but more or less downplayed. They did acknowledge that some people might see it as being outsized to the role. They also got to the issue of whether or not trustees should be talking to the media. And they basically said that the president and the board chair are responsible for speaking for the college. They didn't flat out say it was prohibited for someone like Ray Funderburk to talk to the press, but they said it was, quote, discouraged.
Yeah, and that was mainly Cherry.
When it came to issues of faculty and staff, Cherry said he hadn't looked into retention rates. And as you've been looking at some of these numbers, and over the last 2 years, those rates have to the bottom rung of the 58 community colleges in the state.
Yeah, that's on their community college system dashboard.
The depositions also touched on Michelle Lee's compensation, which, as we've also noted, has been significant over the years. Bill Cherry said, quote, "As a board member, I am satisfied with her salary. But I can see how Joe Blow the rag man walking down the street that has no salary would consider that a lot of money."
And yes, if you recall at the time when he was giving this deposition, she was making $161,000 and now she makes $186,000.
So following up on that, Shipman, Funderburk's attorney, asked if Lee's increasing salary, which is clearly outpacing increases for faculty and other staff, could be an issue. Bill Cherry replied, quote, "I could see where it may." So there was some acknowledgement, at least that the public might see these salaries that were high and going higher and think, hmm.
We know that, too, from both of the depositions, Gary Shipman asked about these climate surveys. Both Cherry and McLeod said they had no knowledge of the faculty association informing the board of its unanimous vote in September of 2021 to conduct an independent third-party employee survey. And they were both at that meeting when the former faculty association president told them that, and they don't remember it. And yes, Cherry came on the board in 2017, McLeod in 2020. They also don't remember seeing the marine technology students voicing their concerns over their program. They came to the trustee meeting on several occasions to decry kind of how their program was being treated. McLeod said in his deposition that with his tenure on the board, no one had ever contacted him about any concerns. And Cherry also attested that he had never heard of any unprofessional behavior by Morton or his administration.
And that presumes that he never saw or heard any mention of WECT's reporting. Again, that was back in early 2020, which contained those on-the-record accounts from Sharon Smith and Kumar Lakavani. Somehow he had not heard about it. He said, quote, "I have never heard that."
Yeah, he said, "I'm not aware." And he also mistakenly called Sharon Smith Miss Harris. "Have you heard of Kumar Lakavani? I never heard that."
So the last thing I want to work through here is what we learned from the deposition of Lynn Criswell, who again was a dean high up in the college and both saw a lot of the behavior that has been reported on by WECT and by you, and also was in the mix and took part in some chapters that I think were unpleasant for her to recount. But she was under oath and she did describe what happened. And so that's sort of the final piece of this. It is not necessarily directly about the allegations against Funderburk, but I think in the course of her deposition, we learned something, at least from her point of view, about the college.
In Funderburk's original complaint, Gary Shipman, the attorney, his attorney, traced this groundwater that led to his removal, and Lynn Criswell can attest to that. 16 people have at least gone on the record about this environment. Lynn has not publicly spoken about her time as dean, but yes, we learn a lot from this deposition. So they started asking her questions about her history there. So Gary Shipman asked her about this environment, and she said, quote, "I had multiple experiences myself with Jim Morton leading up to that point where I had been asked to retaliate against people." And this context was right before this was Jason Chafin was removed. She was talking about him being removed and walked out the door. So that was the context for that.
Another incident that Criswell discusses in her deposition was in 2019 involving an employee in the English department. In her sworn testimony, Criswell said Morton spoke to her about the employee saying, quote, "You know she must be fat and lazy because she's so fat, and you know you need to find something she's doing wrong so we can get rid of her." Criswell said that she then had to demote this employee out of a chair position, but they were kept on as instructor. And she claimed that Morton told her that she hadn't gone far enough in doing this. We should note that the college, again, objects to many of the representations in these depositions and noted that this employee retired, which is true, but they retired after they were demoted.
That's right, because at one point, this employee was over Lynn Criswell. So this person had started out pretty high up and, you know, had those demotions. And yes, they did retire in 2024.
Moving forward a couple of years, in 2021, the college's faculty association did its own climate survey, which was later suppressed by the college. Ultimately, they had to release it because it was a public record. But in her deposition, Criswell described her recollection of a conversation about it with Morton. Again, according to Criswell, Morton said, quote, "These people are in your division, so it's your problem. And I said, well, I will try and find out more. He said he was befuddled at why they were afraid because all their problems had gone to Robeson County. And I took that as a reference to Melissa Singler, who left Cape Fear and went to RCC. And he said, the word is infiltrate."
And Criswell added about this request to, quote, infiltrate that, quote, "I had a good relationship with those faculty. I didn't need to infiltrate something. And it felt like we were going to some sort of war and that I had to choose sides."
On another occasion, Criswell recounts a situation where she was walking around campus with Lee and Morton, and they passed a black female janitor. According to Criswell, Lee said to the janitor, quote, "Would you like me to give you a nickel for every dust you sweep up for me?" Criswell said she was ashamed to be with them.
If you recall at the top of this show, we talked about these explosive allegations in 2020. In this reporting, it referenced Lee and Morton and that they were taking several carpool trips together. And Criswell said she was in the room with Lee when she mentioned this reporting, and she said, quote, "If I looked like this is a former CFCC employee and weighed 300 pounds instead of looking like this," and she's kind of motioning next to her body, "that there wouldn't be a report like that."
On another occasion, Criswell said she told Morton that she was having trouble finding biology faculty, and she claims Morton replied, quote, "Why don't you find these high school teachers? They seem happy." But Criswell knew that that wouldn't work and said in her deposition, quote, "Of course, many high school teachers are not credentialed to teach at the college level, so that was not a viable solution."
And we did hear from the college, and they said that this isn't necessarily unusual to do that type of recruiting. And along these lines with the instructors, you know, Lynn Criswell had to field his concerns about certain instructors' success rates. I've reported on this. It's like how well the students are performing, what their grades are, essentially. So she said that one time Morton came to her and he didn't have any concrete evidence about how they were doing. He just had instructors' names written down, implying that they were problems. And she said, quote, "What startled me was the fact that these were just names on a sticky note. They weren't performance reviews."
One other interaction that Criswell recounts between her and Morton is in her deposition, she's asked by Shipman about Morton threatening her husband's job. She said that Morton, quote, "had serious concerns about the fact that my husband was a faculty member in the division that I supervised." Criswell said that she replied to Morton, quote, "I don't have any involvement in supervising him." And then she said Morton said he would think about it and smiled and walked away.
Yes, and then the college claims he retired in May 2025. He remained in his position and didn't move, so that's their support for not being threatening.
Yeah, I don't think it's a categorical answer to did you or did you not do this. It is just if there was a threat, it wasn't fulfilled. All right, it's worth noting that Lynn Criswell did not stay long at the college after Funderburk was removed.
That's right. It was a couple months later. So she also recorded this, that Guthrie gave her an evaluation that was, quote, "much lower than any other evaluation she had ever received." And he told her that she was, quote, "contributing to low morale among faculty," and that she was, quote, "giving out too many course reductions for other educator responsibilities and projects that they were involved in." And so she tried to push back in this conversation and saying, you know, "Why are you holding me accountable for something you didn't tell me about that I was doing wrong?" Like, she couldn't address it, essentially. But nonetheless, they walked her out in May along with her administrative assistant, Robin Meddy. They were escorted out by sheriff's deputies and they were non-renewed.
We'll say again, this deposition from former Dean Lynn Criswell does appear to be what the college was referencing in their statement to us when they talked about, you know, a former employee whose allegations they dispute. And we can note that the college reiterated something it said in the past, that it has a, quote, "zero tolerance for retaliation and is committed to maintaining a professional and respectful workplace for all employees." And for what it's worth, in his deposition, Bill Cherry cast doubt on Lynn Criswell's testimony, saying, quote, "My assumption is Miss Criswell, is that her name, is no longer with the college and may be disgruntled when she gave you that interview." And certainly, yes, disgruntled employees have been known to exaggerate or resort to hyperbole, but I can also say that we've heard from many disgruntled employees. So some of the concerns that former Dean Lynn Criswell shared are not in isolation.
They are in reporting that I've done and Ann McAdams has done. And since 2021, I have talked to over 50 people. A majority of those are very afraid to go on the record, but I know their stories and the pattern is similar.
And we will have links, tons of links, to all that reporting and backstory. We know we couldn't cover everything in this one episode, but that is just about all the time we have for this show. Again, if you somehow made it through this entire show without knowing what exactly happened at the hearing, we have an entire show dedicated to Ray Funderburk's removal as well. Rachel Keith, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my colleague Rachel Keith and WHQR Program Director Ken Campbell for technical assistance. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.